some point. She has no respect for anybody's agenda.
That's fine. Cats are dicks.
She's just going to hang out for the most part, but she'll complain.
That's fine.
When she's not getting love after a while.
She's hanging out. You're hanging out. I've already hit record. I'm here. This is Brian Breckenridge, episode of the Breckening Podcast. I'm here with Ben McCracken.
Hello, hello.
Is that like a funny punk rock name like Fat Mike or Stizza? Or that's your real name, right?
That's my real name.
And I bet you never got made fun of.
You know, the biggest, the deepest insult of all is that it's even a serious question of whether that's my name.
Like, I know.
Just the constant. Because like any name is always really silly, but just that's like the long con of it.
Yeah.
You live your life, Brian Breckenridge, and you've probably never had anybody go, really? Is that really your name, though? Is that a real name?
I've been asked that about my last name. They're like, is that a stage name or something? I'm like, no. It's just, I thought it could carry me through.
But in a comedy setting where, like, anybody could maybe have a fake name. So, like,
true.
But nobody's ever, like, ID'd you somewhere. And then they'd be like, no shit, is this real?
Oh God! I can
or like if you just told somebody and they'd be like, "No shit!" Like you're like buying a—I don't know—you're at an airport.
The TSA is getting involved about your name.
Yeah, like
it's not a no-fly list. It's a no. Are you for real list? Is this it? All right. Well, I am here not just to talk about your unfortunate name. It is a sweet name. I'm here because you are the singer, guitar player, should I say, songwriter, or. As well,
I do most of that.
An amazing fucking punk rock band from parts unknown.
Thank you.
Part being Dallas, I assume. You're Dallas boy.
I mean, we are from all parts.
Yeah, no, that's fine. No, it's a good band.
We are pretty dispersed.
You guys are fucking awesome. I do really fucking enjoy your band. I remember seeing y'all at Mass, and just was right there. And my buddy was also can't remember his name, but he was. He's one of those guys that gets excited and hits you, and you're not really into it. You're like, no, man, I'm having a great time.
Real backslapper.
Oh, no, like chest.
That's like his love language.
Not even a backslap. That would be fine, but it was like punching in the arm, just kind of like, hey, no. And he wasn't trying to start a pit or anything.
Yeah.
But I remember, it might have been the first time I see you, but I was like right there, and y'all were on that stage at Mass, and it was just, it was just a lot of fun to fucking see.
Thanks, man.
You guys are like definitely punk rock, but I say you probably got a... From what I've seen live, and I've been listening to the new album, fucking love it, Bad Haircuts, available now. It's like punk rock, I would say maybe a little bit hardcore, a little bit ska, a little bit rockabilly, depending on the song and where it all goes, but definitely shredding-ass punk rock.
Totally.
It's right up my alley. It takes me back to like me going into punk rock shows late teens, early 20s, and how much fun I had seeing
those
bands.
That's definitely what we tried to... capture like from the start of this band, and always was thinking like, well, doing what we would have wanted when we were kids, or like, you know, thinking about when you were inspired by music, and then as post 30 plus people recreating that nostalgia from your like teens, being 14, 15, 16, and like being like, well, what would the band you could have been in then, if you could now do?
Yeah. Oh, and you guys, you look like you're having a blast up there, too. I love when a band is also having fun, like doing what they do. It makes me have more fun than if... I'm not saying every band has to jump around and shit, but, like, you know, that's fine. But look like you're enjoying yourself on stage. And
right.
If you're not, then I get it, but that's fine. But it really sells it.
I know for us... In this band, we always strove to, like, well, write songs. Well, for a long time, it was just the only things we'd write were shit that we'd have to play live. And then for that, it would have to be fun.
Yeah.
And we'd have to want to put up with it. Because not having any kind of real boundaries or bosses and always being a pretty much autonomous DIY band and, you know, with just working with, like, smaller DIY labels and shit, we're always able to do whatever we want anyway. So, you know, we're sick of a song, we just stop playing.
Oh, okay, yeah. Nice.
And so for a long
it's
time,
like me, it's like jokes. It's like, I don't like it anymore.
Yeah, and
it's okay, but
like, well, that's retired. And then and then after a while, I'd be like, well, at least we recorded that. You know, we're done playing that.
Yeah.
So everything was out of necessity or then just written for to please ourselves. And it really wasn't until this album, which is like first full length after like 8 years of being in a band, going 9 now. That was the first time we ever really wrote anything in the moment in the studio or just went off the cuff. And things weren't like practiced. Usually we'd go in and do like an EP or a couple singles.
Yeah, you have the Trucker Speed. That shit rips. That's 3 songs. And I'm then, like, I want more, damn it.
And then those, you
how
know,
dare it, you be good? I want
it,
more.
It was like those were just songs we were playing live. And when we got to the studio, we were like, we have enough money for like 3 songs. So yeah. What are our 3 favorites that we think we could really knock out to? And we'd do that. And then every time we'd come in with just this budget limitations and even beyond that, it just had a different attitude up until Derek D-Rock joined the band.
Derek and Soto,
With Jimmy and us, we sat down and we're talking like, you know, 2 years ago, we had like an EP done and we were going to put it out, but then we just kind of thought, screw it, why don't we just make a full-length album? Like, let's just look, like, what do we need? We were like, well, we pretty much have, like, 7-8 songs, and I have a bunch of ideas, and each of them had a couple ideas. So we just were like, all right, well, let's just go in, and we'll just do it, and we'll make it work. And for the first time ever, we're not going to, like, cut or hold back. We're just going to push and see what we can do. And so everything on there, like, you know, the funny thing was, like, a couple songs that got cut were the more well established or written ones that we thought were like, oh, these would be easy and these are guaranteed, and then those didn't even happening. And then a bunch of the songs ended up just being things like we had a riff and we just kind of jammed it and then cemented something or just kind of wrote it there in the moment. Or we had a studio rented out for a couple of days before we started recording, so we just kind of jammed some of those ideas, and then we're like, oh, I think we got a song out of this. And we were like, well, we got it right here now, but we'll see what happens in the studio tomorrow. Yeah. And then, like, Take It Out was one of those. We just wrote it one day rehearsing before, like, a show. And
That's crazy. I hear, as a non-musician, you hear about, like, bands. I saw this article, maybe on Lambgoat or something, where it was, like, some band was, like, writing shit. I think it was even Limp Bizkit. They were, like, writing new songs during sound check.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Because, I have no idea what any of that entails, but it's, like, I get the idea of sound check. I get what's, you know, what's going on. I'm like, oh, he's writing a song on soundcheck. That's awesome.
You know, and I've always
mine is what,
heard that my whole life.
You can hear it live.
And I've always thought that sounded like such a almost overwhelming thing to hear, where you're just like, well, then I do suck, because like they can just shit that out while they're getting ready. And but now I get it. No, because it is just like sometimes shit just hits you. And so, like, there have been times where we've been, like, on stage live, and I just start playing, but you hear, like, the amp tone, and you're dialing in, and all of a sudden, I just kind of start noodling with some riff, but it sounds cool. And it's just kind of reflected from whatever we've been listening to in the van all day. And then we just kind of, when we get that point where we can kind of freely jam when we're all kind of mic'd up and stuff, and we're like, damn, that would have been something.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Oh, we gotta play the show though. Fuck, we can't just.
So that song.
Hey guys, all y'all take like 15. We're gonna work something out. Try not to listen.
So that song was one of those, because it was D-Rock was just playing the bass line for Bill Brasky's "Not One of Us," but he was playing it kind of slow, and Jimmy started doing this kind of disco beat, and I was listening to like a lot of "Against Me," and Hot Water Music. Which, I mean, I always do anyways, but, like, a lot at that point, I think. And
well, they're on my easy shuffle on Spotify
any
just, given day.
I just, you know, hit the one chord, that one D chord, D minor chord, and was just letting it, like, kind of echo, and it was kind of jamming a little melodic thing, and we were like, this is cool. And then somehow it just stuck in my brain. So when we were back in the studio, I was like, we got that one thing that we did, like, months ago for, like, 3 minutes. So I'm a big believer, you know, you remember some stuff sometimes, and it's meant to be.
And hopefully you remember it.
Because it's cool enough. Or you
maybe hopefully you recorded it. If not, hopefully you can remember
it. You at least come up with some kind of version of it that's cool.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter anymore because you'll never know what that original
was. Still hits that original equation that was in your mind at the time of like, no, this is good. Yeah. I like that. Hopefully I can at least get back to that.
I mean, I can definitely say with this record, the couple of the songs that, like the opening track, and like half of the album was written there in the studio, and like some of it was just
is
like,
it so you have like bands have practice spaces and mm-hmm. that's set up however, you know, good or bad or whatever you do because you're practicing. I can only because you know that's where plenty of songs are written. It's a practice yeah. space. I'm guessing you'll sound this come from complete ignorance here. Like if you're in a studio practicing, you're not recording just yet. Like I'm guessing you sound a whole lot better, and so now maybe that affects the process of like, oh, this song can sound this way.
I mean, it just depends. So like I have a rehearsal studio down here by Deep Ellum, but our drummer lives down in San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
So, and for a long time, D-Rock lived in Fort Worth and Arlington.
Yeah, I'd see him at Sunshine.
Yeah. So he lives, and now he lives down here in Dallas, but our drummer's still down there. So it's like we've got our stuff, and I keep our van and like all of our shit there. But for the longest time since Jimmy's been in the band for the last 4 years, it's like he'll come up here, but then sometimes we'd come down and meet him there, and we'd usually just meet in Austin and rent a room at like whichever place. Like, so over the years, like, you used to go like Music Lab, and then they shut down, and going to this place called Space Forever.
It's not a bad idea meeting in Austin, then you can meet up with Austin friends and maybe get on a show.
Yeah, you know, it was always fun. I mean, like, there's part of it where it makes it way more sparse because it's you got that 3.5 hour distance, so there it's way less of a regular thing. It can't be like meeting up every week per se.
Yeah.
And that sucks. But with what I was getting to before is that, like, when we meet down there, like, in our room, we've had ups and downs of, like, PA sounds. So you're like, a really crappy, weak PA that you're just, like, screaming into, and you can't really hit vocals, but we're loud and jamming. And
yeah.
We're having fun, but you can't really hear things that well. Now, kind of upgraded the PA system. But when we'd meet him down there, we'd be at these like different places, and they'd have like a great PA setup. So like it would be sounding great. We'd go in there and be like, "This is cool. This is awesome." And then it feels a little different, you know. Like rather than me just driving down the street to my room and opening up with my key, you know, we're going somewhere else, and it's like a more illustrious building, and we got check in, and sometimes there's like a coffee shop in there, and load our gear in, and go to this like fresh room that's been vacuumed and. They've got like a nice PA system.
No cigar. Set up no already. Cigar butts anywhere. Wow.
No. Well, you go to the cigar lounge outside. And they have like People magazines laying around. And
wow. Music industry sounds awesome. Why is everybody complaining about money? It seems like there's plenty of it.
There's plenty of it being spent. Oh. Because all those things cost money too. Yeah. And that's like every bit of that.
Right. We're here to get a good sound. I guess I'll get a $8 cup of coffee.
Like, you know, one thing I never thought about is like, so I can't remember what rapper are talking about this, but it was somebody like 90s generation rapper, but he was talking about the studio cost, how people don't realize how much more often they're in the studio because like
I want to say this might have been a Houston rapper
of like
one of the guys down there like really owned a lot like his own shit. I can't remember his name, but it sounds like it might be
it might have been actually because my lady and I listen to a lot of Houston rap but he was talking about that, and I thought, man, I never thought about that. But yeah, if you're like especially for a genre where your environment is writing in the studio and you're trying to like capture things and in moments a lot more often. Whereas like, for us, we just rent the spaces and you try to come up with enough cool shit, and then you get ready, and then you go and you try to minimize that studio time as much as possible, because the shit is expensive.
Oh yeah.
And then this record definitely was not cheap to make, but we're all proud of it.
It sounds great. And I've only talking about driving, you know, around playing through Spotify. God knows what it sounds like, you know, properly.
Yeah, well, you know, everything sounds amazing in a producer's booth. like everything, you're in there, you're like, dude, this is going to take over the
world. It totally
world.
Is that Eddie Murphy song. Everybody's in the booth just like, oh, having the best fucking times, and Rick James is there.
Yeah.
It's just like that video, I can imagine.
It is exactly like that.
That's what happens when your girl wants to party all the time. That's a great song. I love that song. And I didn't realize... I don't know if Eddie Murphy has any other songs, but as long as he has that one song.
Oh, he has songs. I never heard a lot of collaborative songs. Like, he did some with Michael Jackson.
Okay. I probably recognize the tune if I heard it. But
you know, that song, Party All the Time, is really appreciated over time. And that's something you don't see a lot.
You don't expect that voice
with
from
pop culture. But, you know, I'm going to say this, man. People are doing that with just... nothing songs sometimes, like, and it's ironic, but it becomes like a placebo effect. Like Rick Astley, mm-hmm. That was all just a joke on It's Always Sunny of him taking this ridiculous, terrible song, and then it became Rick rolling people. But now kids
that did predate
actually
Rick-rolling.
Like that song, and now they're just playing it. And if you zoom out or into the future 10 years, it's gonna, like, people aren't gonna remember the humble beginnings probably.
Yeah.
It's just gonna be liked, and you know, it doesn't matter, because people just like, I've been bartending a long time, and I watch these kids that are into like otherwise terrible shit objectively, like bad early 80s music, bad fashion, drinking Michelob Ultras just freely, like, as if it's a good beer, like going yeah. straight to it, to where now it's like one of the most popular beers, when it went from like 10 plus, like 11, 12 years ago, to being like one of the most unpopular beers in America. And it was about to go under. And the only people who were drinking it were like a bunch of like tennis playing, like, suburban moms. And it was like for like suburban people who think they're being healthy.
Mm. Like, oh yeah,
tennis and
definitely
golf.
Definitely
how
it's marketed now.
And all those people, their kids just see their parents drinking that shit and listening to like Kenny Loggins and whatever trash that was cool when they were teens. But then those kids are like, yeah, and they're like going through college and they're going to bars, and those are the songs they're
that's
playing.
The yacht and rock, that's the shit.
Yeah.
That, and which was, when I only learned about that being a genre, I don't know, like 5 years ago. Because I was like, yacht rock? I was like, wait, what? And then you hear the examples, you're like, okay, that makes sense. That's a good name for a genre.
And
I think Loggins fits right in
there. Yeah. No, totally. And it is the same kids. They're wearing like the boat shoes and dressing like an 80s villain freely
yeah,
under their own volition. Like, they're just
the short khaki shorts.
Got up, decided to wear that oversized like salmon Lacoste shirt. And you know, the sad thing is just that, like, if you bartend long enough, you see these kids from being underage kids to legally able to drink kids to then like postgraduates to then just straight up attorneys. And you've just been there the whole time cracking those beers and getting to see them just outgrow your cynicism to where, like, in the end, they're just like, you're still here, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'll take 5 Michelob Ultras.
For all this, still going back to the 90-calorie.
Yeah, still going back. But that's how that kid keeps that shirt oversized.
This isn't like a theory or anything, but I've gone to places and try to wear a Miller Lite, and then I get a Michelob Ultra because it's like loud, and you just have to like yell your order. Good. So in a loud club, Michelob Lite and Miller Lite can be. I wonder if that was in the name.
You know, it's probably just not. An educated guess. It's
probably a very old brand too.
They're probably just like, I can't hear, but this is nobody cares. Or you might be part of a funny little, probably not, but at least popular theory. But it's like that's just their like little social experiment, because I've done that over the years where I'm like, I'm going to see if they even say anything. Mm. I'm just going to give him the wrong beer every time and see if he just drinks it.
Are you talking draft pour or like can bottle or both?
Anything.
So you just did. Okay. Because draft.
I've never done that per se, but I'm just saying, you know, like.
They're both good experiments. They're both great. But one, you could definitely see what you said or, you know, what you got or didn't get. The other one is just like it's like, all right, it looks close enough.
Right. Well, if you can tell the difference between a Bud Light, Miller Lite, or Coors Light on draft, then, you know, more power to you, man. Also, if you have that specific of a palate, maybe you should step up to the next level of flavors.
It is all the low calorie beers these days,
right?
Miller, Michelob, and all your seltzers, which I indulge in all of those sometimes.
But. I don't believe in diet products. I go for full things. You know, I'm not gonna drink a diet soda. If I was gonna have a soda, it's just gonna be a real one. I'll just drink less of it. like the original diet.
If I'm gonna get fucked up, I'm gonna do shots of whiskey and not vodka.
Yeah,
good whiskey.
I'm not gonna drink a Coors Light. I'll drink a Coors. Like I'll drink a Budweiser a High Life.
I had a Coors Original a couple years ago because I, thanks to amazing product placement, Cobra Kai. Did you see that?
No, but I know of it.
So that show, I think from the first season on, when you're introduced to Johnny, you know, you're like, oh, he was the villain. But it's just like, you know, the take on it.
Yeah.
But he in his fridge or when he's at a bar, he always orders Coors Banquet. And so after a few seasons, I was like, man, I saw it. You know, I was just like, you know, whatever, drink what I drink. But I was like, you know what? It's been a long time since I've had one of those Coors Banquets. So I was at a bar, and I was like, give me a Coors Banquet. And I took a drink. I was like, that is terrible. But I love it because it made me think of the first time I ever had beer.
I was like, in my mind, I thought it would be funny if, like, you're trying to wrestle with the idea of not being affected by marketing, you know? So you're like, I'm going to order that. But then you say out loud to the guy, you know, like, I'll take a Coors Original, but only because I want it, you know? And he's like, what? not because of the ad. Not because of that.
I've always loved, you know, being super aware of, like, marketing. You know, even like back in like maybe before I was got into punk, where like that was always the thing like I liked about punk. It was just like how you call people sellouts, which I think we should start doing again. Like, you know, that they're over marketing or obviously, you know, just changed.
That's just now I know that that's nothing more than hating.
Oh, I know.
Or loser talk.
Fuck it. Let's just bring it back. But what? But now,
like nothing more than just like pseudo elitism and being a gatekeeper yourself.
I talked to
like,
some guys.
You're like, man, they can't be that successful because I don't like all those other people. You know, rationale. It's just kind of silly. Like,
it always
some
has
been. Things are just universal, and also like, why not? You know, like. Maybe that's why.
Why shouldn't this band make a living off their music? Like that's where, because it's such a young thing. I was young. I was like, fuck consumerism. You know, I didn't know what capitalism was enough to really hate it, but I knew I hated consumerism.
Yeah.
And marketing, advertising, and finding out about, and just propaganda and how it's like basically just, you know, corporate propaganda. And I've always found that fascinating.
Yeah.
And so, but when you find out the ugly truth of musicians, you're just like, because you don't know that first. You know, you're just like, oh, it's just marketing. Oh, there's bands out there and they're sponsored by fucking, you know, Capital One or some shit like that. But then you realize when bands first do that, they get all this shit, they get all this hate. But it's just like, well, do you know, you probably weren't aware, especially pre-internet, how much they weren't making.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, well, I do love their music and I do want to hear more of it. Oh, and if you're just mature enough to, you know, take that all in and balance it out, you're just kind of like, I don't care. You signed to Atlantic. Who gives a shit? Like Bad Religion. they're still an amazing fucking band. I know people hated it when they went to Atlantic. Well, they put out Recipe for Hate. That was a great album.
Yeah.
I still like New America is when I got into Bad Religion. And I know it's one of their like lowest ranked albums if you find a list or something. But I fucking love that album because I saw them on a tour with Blink-182. Phoenix TX, Bad Religion, Blink-182. And that was the New America album. And I just love it.
They're like, come along, cynical grandpa. Time to catch some fans.
But I also really didn't know, like, I was like, oh, there's people that out there that hate Bad Religion because they signed to Atlantic. I really didn't know that. That was the first I was hearing about it. So yeah. I didn't know about the history of them and Epitaph and all that.
You know, I mean, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's all silly. I've been the same way. I was the same cynical hater.
Oh, yeah.
Of a lot of things. But, you know, Lagwagon had a song about how silly that is and called Know It All, and I'm pretty sure I was on Trash, and it was dealing with like people just hating on bands after they hit a certain amount of success, and they have to just be indie just enough cool and
like them even hating like, ew, they're on Warped Tour, you know, like something that low level. It's just like, really? You don't want them to. They get how the system works, but they still love it so much that they deal with the bullshit. And that's what I love about musicians is as fucked as y'all have gotten for so long. You
just
still do it.
Somehow keep doing it.
That's what makes me. And
that's the thing. I always think it's amazing that we have people that cook food out there because it's such a hard. It's so hard to become a chef. And such a thankless road, and there's no real pay on the way, and it's alienating, and it's tough, and yet we have so many chefs, and so many people cook, and then at all levels, and people do it all, and I think it's amazing, and it's the same thing with every other job I don't want to do, and I think it's amazing with musicians, because, you know, especially what I was going to say is, like, the day you find out that all your favorite bands have side jobs, and still work, or... Unless they're lucky enough, the only ones that don't have to work are the bummy ones that have, like, somebody who lets them, like, stay with them for free or keep their shit there, like, and couch surf when they're back. And usually lead singers, like, the lead singers out there that are just like, oh, no, dude, my aunt keeps my shit, you know, and, like. Because
he doesn't have any equipment to come along with
it. I got a girlfriend right now, so she'll take me back when I come back for 4 months until we break up again. You know, but yeah, it's, I don't know that, but you know, that whole cynicism, everything you touch on, it's just really cause you know, we hate injustice from like a bullying perspective or when like what we perceive is unfairness and cause it is bullshit. So you hate the thing you hate about consumerism is just when you see how much the system can be easily rigged or how powerless people become so quickly after like the chips have been stacked in one corner.
Yeah.
And then it makes sense because that shit's terrible. And every like, you know, everything we're ever doing throughout our whole life is analogous to that. You're playing Mario and King Cooper is the rich monopolist or the grand mergers going on that are causing so much more inequality or whatever, whatever factor, whatever political machine that's doing some injustice or whatever, you know, and that's everything. So you just grow up and you're like, this is bad. But when you're a kid, all that shit makes sense. And you're like, you can point it out and say like really simple shit, like just like, I don't know, you know, like, why are you cutting down the rainforest? Stop doing that. We need those trees. End of story. Then you grow up and you try to say that, and they're like, yeah, but I mean, let's talk about, like, fair trade policies, and, you know, that's Ecuadorian policies, you know, and, like, we're just outside. If they want to sell us the trees, that's fine, you know, but, like, it's so what, maybe we have, like, a company over there that's cutting down the trees, but they're based there, it's their laws, you know, and you're like, that's not any real answer.
What song is this based after?
This is off of the fifth track.
What's who's from Parts Unknown? Like, who have y'all opened for? I've always been curious of that.
All kinds of bands.
Name drop. That's what all it's about.
Face to Face.
Oh, fuck.
Good Riddance. The Ataris.
Good Riddance. Now that was a band that really sucked my teeth.
Voodoo Glow Skulls. Technically, we've played like festival stage with a bunch of crazy bands, so, like TSOL.
I remember everybody got into Code Blue. Everybody covered Code Blue.
88 Fingers Louie. All kinds of bands. I'm a little stoned right now. So.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
I almost wanted to be like, just shoot them out there and let's see which ones we could say yes to.
Were you in any bands before? Like, I'm kind of curious about that, how you started.
Yeah, I was, right before From Parts Unknown, I was in a psychobilly band called The Trusted Few, and that band kind of imploded because the other dudes were kind of thieving shitbags, and both quit one by one. I mean, the first one wasn't a thief. He was just a liar and terrible. And then he quit right before he could fire him. And then the other guy, turns out, spent
ironic
all of our
with the
money,
band name.
Right? I know, right? And then the
then
other
it became
guy,
the ironic few.
Turns out he'd spent all of our band money. And right before we could fire him, he quit. And then both of them from the outside were just like, you can't take our band. but we were like, well, y'all both quit. So I feel like we inherit it because we didn't. And then, one day they, deleted our accounts. And so that's when we formed this band. We were like, you know what? All right, let's... but before all that, I was in a metal band called Dying Ground for some years. And then lots of non-starts and random projects before that. Mm. And lots of different stuff. But nothing like... Yeah, I played drums in a reggae band when I was 18.
Oh, that's cool.
And that was the first time I'd ever played in front of people technically without little things here or there, sing on a stage with a friend's band or something like that. But first time ever doing real shit. And but that was kind of short lived. They kicked me out, got a better drummer. Mm. And then after that, I kind of still was playing, but I was just kind of a half-assed drummer. So then after a while, I was like, I'm going to go back to guitar.
Oh, okay.
And then it took a long time. I just had terrible luck. So it took 3-4 years. I'd join a thing, but we were always missing a player. We'd be like, oh man, well, we're just waiting on finding a bass player. Or,
it's always the
fucking
bass players. I love the general shit that bass players get. Me and my buddy Chris, he's a bartender out in Fort Worth. He plays bass, and we had this fun fake online beef where he just make fun of me as a comedian, and I make fun of him for being a bass player, and. There's some people that thought it was real. We presented it as jokes, but man, people thought they approached him. It's like, hey, what's up with you and Brian? Is everything okay? He's like, oh no, we're just fucking with each other. Just,
oh man, you should have taken it to a TMZ level prank from there.
Oh, I wish, but we're good buds. So yeah. It's like, ah, fuck, why not? But it's always, I have a joke where I talk about merch tables and I always put, I'm just like, in every, some poor bastard, let's call him the bass player, has to man this merch table.
Oh,
I know,
man.
You'll probably take turns.
I wish. I usually have to do it. We used to have merch people for years. And I always would find somebody for a long time.
The president of the fan club? I always assume that's who it is.
No, the president's too busy for that. he's got special properties. And after a while, going back to just it's expensive being in a band, and it really doesn't amount to a whole lot of pay, if any, sometimes. And after a while, we were just like, it felt weird. We're trying to get somebody to dedicate time. But then, like, if you're paying them, you're kind of paying them the only profit you're really making off of your merch. Like, if you're selling, like, $150 in merch and then you give them $50, or, like, let's say you're paying, like, $200 or whatever, but then you pay them, like, $50 to watch your stuff and come out and spend the night doing that, you know, that's pretty much the profit margin right there that you're really even making off of that stuff. And then beyond that, you know, it's like, I'd feel bad if we were expecting somebody to actually do stuff and then not paying them.
So do I get the merch guy job or not? Because this was an interview. Yeah, but this whole thing was an interview for me.
It pays $30.
I can make that work. I'll try to sell some of my stickers on
the
site.
Well, okay, one thing I also found after a while that, like, it really only pays off if people, like, know who you are, or enough people are just trying to buy shit. But at the end of the day, you have to be by your merch table, because people are kind of functionally illiterate. Yeah. And so you'll have, like, banners, and you'll say your name a bunch, but people still won't know, and they'll be like, "You're that guy from the band. What's the name?" And then you, like, tell them again, and then it'd be like,
and then, like, right behind you, in front of you, are albums,
yeah,
and shirts that have your band name in various formats
behind your merch booth with your name all over everything once again. And then they're like, "Oh shit, you got stuff for sale?" And then they're like, "Yeah, we said that on stage twice." And then they're like, "Oh shit, well, I only have a card." And I'm like, "It's 2023. We can take cards." And they're like, "Oh no shit." You know, but, like, you go through that.
We don't need the swiper thing anymore.
Easily a number of people that don't even make that connection, that just walk away. And they just don't even know. And they don't listen. You're saying your name, but they're not taking it in. They're lost in their own thought train. They're, you know, maybe drunk or on drugs.
If you did your job, they're pretty drunk.
especially if you're playing late. Then you know that, like, the odds are they are probably – probably been fucked up, but there's so much that, but even then, it's like, I change into some clothes and maybe put my glasses on, and then people are like, they don't
even recognize me.
And my whole life, I made fun of that premise so hard,
dude. It's
that, like, there's no way that works. That is so stupid. Superman couldn't just put on glasses and become a deer. Totally could. People are really unobservant.
Especially because you got the long hair. You can make it down or ponytail.
Yeah, if I put it in the ponytail,
you got four combos.
Some glasses.
Glasses and ponytail
then people,
alone.
I literally had a lady talking to me at one of our last shows about me, not knowing I'm me. Until halfway through the conversation, she's like, wait, is that... are you him? Yeah, that's you. And then she got embarrassed and walked away. And I'm like, is this happening?
And that's night of. Like, I think there was a span of a few years where I didn't see you and you grew your hair out. And maybe you had glasses on. That plus, like, 3-4 years. I think maybe it was mass or something. I was like, Ben? And you're in the van. And you're like, hey, man. I think, like, you held up a joint or something. I was like, oh, all right. I know what you're doing.
that came with the long hair.
Yeah.
It came out and it brought hippie properties with it.
Well, it does smell like a head shop in here, in a complimentary way. I always enjoy that smell. It takes me back.
We usually light candles, but lately
definitely
smells
some incense.
I missed the incense, so we went and got some Nag Champa to, you know, rekindle that head shop, classic head shop feel.
Now I want to buy some darts, a Frisbee Golf, and...
I have some for sale, actually. It's a good thing you said that, because I have... I'll take you... final tour of my place. Sweet. To the actual merchant booth.
Well, speaking of merchant booths,
go.
Always go to For Parts Unknown shows. Head up their merch booth. Check out their new album, Bad Haircuts. It's a rip rocking good time. Ben, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Brian.
And thanks for doing the comedy show one time and open up for our buddies in Heels.
Man, that was a great, great show.
That was a lot of fun. And I, like, when you busted out a Hot Water Music cover, I'm like, I knew this was the right thing to do. Plus, Josh and Brennan were like, oh, no, we love Ben.
Oh, man. I didn't even remember I did that. That's great. I was thinking, like, what song did I do? And now I'm like, I think I did Trusty Chords.
That makes sense. Classic. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. This has been an episode of the Breckening Podcast. Subscribe, listen, enjoy. download. Come see me do stand-up. Check my socials at The Breckening. Have a great day.